welcome to episode 42 of Cavalytics. Cavalytics is a podcast about the NBA's Cleveland Cavaliers with a focus on statistical analysis. I am Keith Carter, a former Clevelander and lifelong Cavs fan now living in San Francisco. My co-host is Joshua Jamison, a proud Ohio State Buckeye living in Pittsburgh. How's it going, Josh?
Keith, I've been waiting days and days for this moment to record this podcast with you right now.
Yeah, I think I pushed you off at least 13 different times, and my apologies started getting a little bit less believable, I think, as we sort of worked our way into the low double digits, so I apologize for that.
Well, I'm glad we're doing this now. You ready to talk some Kyrie Irving?
Yeah, are you excited?
Oh, you know I'm excited.
I'm a little apprehensive about this show because I am sort of oft criticized, I guess, for my not liking of Kyrie Irving. And I'm hoping to dispel that and to create a framework that we as a group, so you and I and our listeners, can all agree on for sort of evaluating whether he's been good in the past, whether he was good last season, whether he was good in the playoffs, and whether he will be good going forward. And my idea here is I would like to end today's show with us each making a prediction about what we think Kyrie's end of regular season real plus minus will be. And if any of our listeners feel strongly enough, they feel affronted enough by my prediction, they think it's too negative, then they can tweet us or email us, and I'll give that information out later. And if Kyrie beats my prediction by 0.5 points of RPM, I will buy anyone who's willing to take the other side of that bet. So if he is less than 0.5 points below, I will buy anyone a pizza who's interested in that bet. But they have to buy me a pizza if Kyrie's worse.
Now, what sort of pizza are we talking? Like, is there a requirement? Like, if I get upset, can I just buy you a little Caesar's hot and ready?
Right, yeah. Let's say the pizza has to be a pizza of the winner's choosing. I live in San Francisco, so...
Yeah, I can't afford those San Fran
right,
pizzas.
I mean, you know, the pizza place I order from, Little Star Pizza, sometimes it can get up into the 40s for a single large pizza.
Wait, is that we'll serious?
Yeah, I'm serious. So we'll cap it at 30 bucks, including delivery. Including delivery and tip, just so that these things don't get out of control.
$40 for a pizza.
Yeah, yeah. The place I order from, Little Star Pizza, it's $43.
Oh my goodness!
Including delivery.
I'm never leaving the Midwest.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's what you get. You know, there's the sunshine and ocean.
$43
fee, I guess. Wow. So anyway, before we get into Kyrie, and as we wrap up the pizza segment of our podcast, there are some sort of Cavs news and notes to get through. Are you ready?
Absolutely.
Okay, so the first is the Cavs signed free agent Tony Douglas today. Tony Douglas last year was pretty good. He was a point guard for, I think, the Pelicans. And he averaged, I think, 8 points, 2 rebounds, 2 assists kind of thing. Yeah, 2.6 assists, 2.3 rebounds and 8.7 points in 20 minutes per game. It's pretty good. I think that works out to a player efficiency rating of 14.5 for people who like that. I am conspicuously not mentioning his real plus minus because ESPN doesn't list it. And I tweeted Jeremiah Sengelman, the guy who's in charge of that, and we'll see if maybe he'll get back to us live during this podcast. But for now, I don't know what his real plus minus is. I just have to look at these old-fashioned statistics. Do you know anything about him?
I mean, maybe his real plus minus is plus, you know, 6.5.
Yeah, that's right. You know, they left him off because he's off the charts. He's actually better than Steph Curry at point guard.
Yeah, it's incredible. I mean, he might have, like, okay counting stats, but he played 61 games for what was the most injured and one of the worst teams in the league.
Yeah,
basically,
I don't...
Basically, at zero guard depth.
Yeah, 8.7 points per game on the Pelicans is not the same as 8.7 points per game on, say, the Cavs. And just one other thing that's, like, sort of encouraging about him. So he took 3.3... threes per game last year and made them at 40%, 39.9. That's not bad.
He's a 36% 3-point shooter for his career, though, so that's probably a just a small sample
I
size.
guess an optimistic Keith might say something like, well, now, but he's going to be playing on the Cavs, and the Cavs are better, and maybe they'll be able to create more open shots for him.
That's true. I would actually be surprised if he makes the roster, to be honest. I mean, I guess he could make the roster simply because who else is going to fill the spot of who we will
Backup point
next
guard.
talk about, Mo
Right.
Williams. But, I think that they would rather just run the wheels on Kay Felder and Jordan McRae and see if they can make one of those guys work than give real backup minutes to
Tony Douglas.
Tony Douglas.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I just suspect that he's already better than, not already, he is currently better than Kay Felder. And I don't, maybe that intuition is wrong. All I've seen is of Kay Felder are highlight videos. He looks awesome on those. But yeah, just the cynic in me thinks he's probably not very good.
So I guess the question is that are you losing something like long term if you are? So I mean, like, what we're talking about maybe 10 minutes a game,
Yeah.
and maybe 12 minutes a game if Kay Felder's playing those 12 minutes and allowing him to develop and improve. If they think highly enough of him that they overspent for that second round draft pick. So
Yes.
I think he's going to make the team. I know that you said you didn't think he was going to make the team and he'd play in Canton.
Well, that was before ever all the backup point guards left. Dellavedova's gone, Mo Williams is gone. I think I said that before. But yeah, you're right. I definitely was on record of saying I didn't think Felder was going to make the team.
Yeah, so I think he'll make the team, and I think he will. They're at least going to start the season trying to see if he can handle the role, because I just don't think there's a lot to lose. I think the Cavs are going to pretty easily slide into the number one overall seed, and even if Boston or Toronto took it, I don't think that they're too worried about losing home court advantage. So I think they'll at least start the season doing that. But I mean, obviously, this Tony Douglas signing, zero risk. It's totally non-guaranteed, and they can cut him whenever. But the reason why they even did this is because Mo Williams retired, which I think we
Right.
should talk about.
Yeah, we could briefly eulogize his career, I guess. He retired. I guess he's too hurt to play. The timing of all of this is very strange. So he retired the day that train or the Cavs announced that he retired on their media day, which is the first day of training camp. There were some rumors that maybe he had failed a physical. Mo Williams did not even show up in Cleveland, so it's not like they looked at his knees and told him he couldn't play. He just decided he didn't want to. Why do you think he decided that?
I'm not sure. He tweeted, I think it was the day before, and maybe the day before that, that he was coming back. So I
Right.
assume there's some kind of conversation between him and David Griffin, and I guess they didn't want him back, which means something, because it's not as if he would have been playing a ton of minutes to begin with. But I think, again, I think that's just more evidence. I think they feel pretty good about Kay Felder. And I don't think it was because they felt pretty good about their chances to sign NBA
Legend Tony Douglas.
legend Tony Douglas. I was going to say journeyman was
They
the
always
word.
had that in their back pocket.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, look, I don't, I like conspiracy theories. My conspiracy theory on this one is Mo Williams' feelings were hurt that he was not sort of promised a certain number of minutes, and he just decided that rather than sort of suffer the indignity of playing 60 games of, 8 minutes per game, he just decided to hang it up. But maybe he is actually hurt. There's been all kinds of rumors about his knees. It's just that there were all these rumors about his knees, but then whenever he came in, he looked fine. He would huck up, his usage rate when he was in the game was like 50%. Like every time he touched the ball, he would shoot it. So, yeah, I just don't know. In any case, Williams was he was a really good Cav when he was here during his first stint. He'll always have that dunk over Paul Pierce. And, it's a little sad that he's done, but he was sort of done last year anyway.
Yeah, I tend to agree with your assessment of the situation. Anytime that I'm not playing particularly well or not getting a ton of playing time and pick up basketball, I tell people I'm going to retire and I leave
Yeah.
as well.
Yeah, fake an
So,
injury.
exactly.
Another thing on this Tony Douglas signing, so J.R. Smith immediately after the signing, did you see this? I don't know if you saw this. Immediately after the signing was announced, J.R. Smith tweeted, dot, dot, dot.
I love it.
Now, there was a Twitter storm and a big panic on Reddit about this. The presumption, the supposition is that J.R. Smith is perhaps annoyed by this signing because Tony Douglas duplicates some of his skill set, albeit poorly. What do you think?
Yeah, well, I always find it hilarious when professional sports athletes, that's a funny term, as professional athletes decide to basically subtweet. LeBron does it all the time. I just wonder, like, what is J.R. Smith thinking that he's achieving other than getting 3,400 retweets to try to put that pressure on the Cavs? But ultimately,
I'm sure that's how David Griffin operates, by the way. He's like, oh, you know, Dan Gilbert, look, this got 3,400 retweets. We got to up our offer.
hey, I'm not saying that's how David works, but it could be how J.R. Smith thinks it works. No, I mean, like, ultimately, it's just kind of funny. I think he was just pulling a joke. I still think the deal's going to get done. I think it's probably more over years than actual money at this point, if I had to guess. Simply based on Wall, though, that they'll have a pretty big tax either way. I think they really just don't want to have him past his age 33 season or whatever it is. I still think it gets done. I hope it gets done before the ring ceremony.
I agree with everything you just said. I think the Cavs don't want to go more than 2 years. I think it would be nice if they could sign him before the ring ceremony. And I think it will get done before the ring ceremony. But I think J.R. Smith will wait as long as possible to see if he can get a couple extra million out of the Cavs. And the Cavs have not established enough of a backbone to say this is our final offer and for that to be believable to Rich Paul or J.R. Smith.
Here's a different question. Do you think that, like, he's gonna be in shape when he shows up?
He's been spending a lot of time at Indians games, so if he's been eating too many hot dogs, no. Apparently, he has season tickets to the Indians now. I don't know what that
Wow.
means. Apparently, he has season tickets to the Tribe. I think he'll be in shape. That's not something that's really been an issue for him in his career, showing up to camp out of shape. Maybe drunk, but not out of shape. Speaking of players in shape, apparently Iman Shumpert has lost 5 pounds, and I can't remember if it was Irving or LeBron or somebody was, admiring, how muscular he looks.
It was Irving.
Is that good? That's good, right?
Well, I'm wondering, when you sent this to me, I couldn't help but feeling like, where's he finding that 5 pounds? Like,
He wasn't
he was already,
exactly.
it's not like he was, I mean, these are already pretty in shape guys. And if anything, you'd think that he's lifting a ton and trying to bulk up, but he lost 5 pounds. So I'm not sure. He cut, and I don't know what it means. It probably doesn't mean much.
Yeah, I mean, I did not see his hydrostatic body fat testing results from last season versus this, so I just don't know. I agree. He didn't look like he had a whole lot of poundage to lose, but apparently he has. He had a dunk in last night, so the Cavs had their wine and gold scrimmage last night, which is a, I think it's only open to season ticket holders, but maybe anyone who shows up at the queue can get in. And they just have the players scrimmage against each other. LeBron didn't play. Irving must have played because there was a highlight of Irving giving Shumpert a dunk, an alley-oop, which was nice.
Which is really funny because didn't he hurt his wrist trying to do a dunk like that
Yes, he
last
didn't he
season?
break his wrist in the preseason? I think, yeah, that's right, because he and Irving were both hurt to start the season. Yeah, Tyronn Lue, even after the game, I saw a quote from him saying he was joking about, as athletic as Shumpert is, he misses more dunks than anyone he's known who's that athletic. And yeah, that's always been the running joke on Shump. Like, he can get up there and look good, but he misses so many that you just wish he would just go up with two hands, dunk it, and run back down to the other side. You don't have to go for the SportsCenter highlight where you incur a, half percent chance of injuring yourself every time you try it. Let's see, what else? There's a couple things. Oh, I did want to say, so look, it was just a scrimmage last night, and I don't know. Look, stats from inter-squad scrimmages are probably not the most reliable, but Kayfelder did go 1 of 6 from the floor. He had 4 assists and a turnover. Jordan McRae went 2 of 9 with 4 assists and 2 turnovers. And DeAndre Liggins, who's this other dude the Cavs have in camp who ostensibly can play point guard, he went 2 for 2 with 5 points and 2 rebounds, 1 steal, and no assists. So based on that, we still don't know anything.
Yeah. Scrimmages. They really don't mean much.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like me counting my NBA 2K15 stats and like somehow translating that into something reasonable. Okay, I think I have two more things to talk about before we get to Kyrie. The first is a couple interesting things in the political realm from LeBron. The first was he says he supports Colin Kaepernick's right to protest, but he will stand during the anthem. And the second is he had a long, presumably ghostwritten piece that got published yesterday or the day before endorsing Hillary Clinton. Did you see that?
Yeah, I think it's very interesting. I can't think of another instance where an active athlete decided to kind of weigh in on endorsing a political candidate like this. And what's, I think, obviously the most interesting factor about it is how Ohio is a swing state.
Right.
And he actually could have an impact if you think about demographics and who tends to turn out to vote and the type of demographic that he might be able to help come out to vote. It actually, I've seen a lot of people try to say that it probably doesn't mean much. I actually think it probably could have a, you know, small but real impact on the Ohio election, which I just thought was really interesting that he felt the need to weigh into that.
Yeah, I think that's really well said. Who knows what the impact is? I think it's non-zero, and in such an important swing state that, you know, according to the polls, is as close as you can basically call it. It could make a difference. It's also interesting that LeBron, felt emboldened and enabled to do this. Like, I wonder if he has to run things like this past Nike. I'm regardless of whether or not you agree with his opinion, I think it's great that he's taking a stand.
Yeah, he's never shied away from political issues before. Some people have said that he should be more active, and then other people say he should be less. But for the most part, he has expressed his opinions when he thinks that it's needed. And I definitely respect him for that, for not just remaining silent when he feels that something's very important.
Yeah, I agree. Okay, well, let's move on from that one. Tyronn Lue has invited Kevin Garnett to join the Cavs coaching staff, if Garnett is interested. How do you feel about KG as assistant coach?
Oh, that'd be amazing. I mean, it would probably be a dumpster fire in terms of actual coaching, but Kevin Garnett is one of the best NBA personalities ever.
Yes.
And having him on the bench just screaming and raving like
a lunatic.
I feel
like he would be like, he could like rip open his shirt and have a jersey underneath and demand to like go in and
yes.
play. Like he's so fiery. Like, yeah, look, I suspect Kevin Garnett is not as much of an aficionado of the analytics movement as I am. These guys are all human, and to the extent that some people can inspire other people to try harder, I can't think of somebody more inspiring than Kevin Garnett. I think it would be interesting just from a fun to watch standpoint, and I think also it could actually be a good move. But yeah, it's just a pipe dream probably.
Yeah, Kevin Garnett has expressed in the past that he didn't have any interest in coaching, and I know that people saying thing one day could change the next, but if he is going to do that, I don't think he's going to do it right off the bat. I bet he takes some time off.
Yeah, I think so too. I don't know if he knows how to take time off. I mean, remember, he came out of high school. Like, he doesn't know what it's like to sit around, but yeah, it should be interesting.
Well, I'm actually not convinced that he's done playing. I think that he was kind of pressured into a buyout situation. So I don't know. Like, you might see him sign with the Clippers and play, you know, half a season there. We'll see.
Yeah, I think he was pressured. I think he was planning on playing, and because of the way things ended in Minnesota, he just sort of decided to throw in the towel. I don't know. This happens in baseball a lot. Like, you remember Roger Clemens for like the last 4 years of his career, maybe it was the last 2 years, but it seemed like 10, would sort of declare 50 games into the regular season that he was actually going to come back, and then there was like this free agent bidding war. I wonder I don't know if there's much precedent for that in basketball. Ray Allen has sort of hinted at doing that, but it hasn't really come to fruition. So, yeah, maybe it could happen with KG. I don't know.
I think what's happening is you're seeing the stars aligning for the Hall of Fame team, the Banana Boat guys, plus Ray Allen, Kevin Garnett, Paul Pierce. They're all going to join one team, and they're all going to be over age 35, and they're not going to be that good, but I would buy a ticket to see
Yeah, it'd be like seeing the geriatric Globetrotters or something. Yeah,
it.
I mean that the their win expectation would probably be like 30 wins, but man, the starting lineups would be fun.
That's, yeah, for sure.
All right, well, let's move on to the main event here. Kyrie Irving. So I thought we could start this with me sort of explaining why I have been a Kyrie Irving skeptic. Do you think that's a good place to start? So I'll just sort of lay the groundwork for like why he hasn't been perhaps as good as maybe other people think he is.
You mean why you've been a Kyrie Irving hater, I think is the word you're looking
I mean, I've certainly that word has been used in reference to me
for.
and my feelings toward Kyrie Irving. I reject that critique, but yes, that's right. So here's why I am not a particularly huge Kyrie Irving fan. So his real plus minus since he came in the league. So we only have real plus minus data for the last 3 years. He has not been a top 20 point guard for any of the last 3 years. And there have been some mitigating factors there. Like, for example, last year he was injured. The 2 years before that, he also was a bit injured. That doesn't really explain his 14-15 season, where he was the 38th best player in the NBA by RPM. Like he by plus minus, which of course is the stat that I care most about, he just isn't very good. His defensive plus minus is particularly damning. Last year, he was 69th out of 74 point guards. The year before, he was 36 out of 73, not bad. But the year before that, he was 59 out of 67 point guards. He's just terrible on defense, and I personally find that kind of inexcusable for Kyrie because it's not he's so athletic. I know he has it in him to be a good defender, but he's just not. And in particular, last year, which is when I sort of first started having a little bit of a pulpit from which to rant about Kyrie Irving. During the regular season with Kyrie Irving on the floor, the Cavs were plus six per 100 possessions. And with Matthew Dellavedova on the floor, the Cavs were plus 10 per 100 possessions. And Delly had played 1,800 regular season minutes, and Irving played 1,700 regular season minutes. So there's not, I'm not like cheating there with sample size. And so that's basically the case against Kyrie Irving. Something happened in the playoffs last year, which basically completely reversed that narrative. The Cavs were plus eight in the playoffs, where it's harder to be a plus team with Irving in the game. And of course, he was incredible in games six and seven of the finals. And so the big question for me, and we're going to talk about this today, is what is Kyrie Irving? Like, how good is he? What is his ceiling? What can we expect this year? And will I finally be able to eat some crow about him? Okay, I'm
Yeah,
done. Go ahead.
that's a lot. Kyrie Irving is, just to be frank, Kyrie Irving is kind of the reason why I ended up liking basketball, which is a really interesting time. I didn't grow up like being a huge basketball fan, and LeBron left, and there wasn't a lot of things to root for, but Kyrie Irving came along, and so I think like part of the conversation around Kyrie Irving is so hard to have because there were like the lean years for 3 years where he was the only bright spot of the entire team. I
Yeah,
mean,
he was the
not
great
many,
hope.
right, exactly. And not many people were getting all that excited for Dion Waiters and Tristan Thompson,
Right.
at least not in the same way. And so it definitely is hard to have a Kyrie Irving conversation, but you know, I've been pretty down on him before. I remember just feeling a spark of rage when he pulled up for that three-pointer in game seven, because a pulling up for a three-pointer in that situation is maybe the worst, lowest efficient shot you can take.
Yes.
And I guess like a pull-up two-pointer would be less efficient, but he...
Yeah, pull-up long two, yeah.
Right, and so I was just filled with anger, and he proved me wrong. And so I think we can have a conversation about how I do think that he kind of showed that when he's locked in, he can be really quite good.
Well, when he's locked in offensively, he is. I think it would be hard to make an objective case that he's not one of the most fun players to watch play offense in the league. The way he dribbles is not necessarily efficient, but it's incredibly fun to watch. He's a magician with the basketball. His shooting is incredible, and his creativity around the rim is really fun to watch. And we're going to talk a little bit about his efficiency around the rim later, but just from a pure aesthetic standpoint, he's unbelievable. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, definitely. And if you look at real plus minus, his offensive RPM, not last year, but the year before, which is his best year among the three that we have, he was fifth in the NBA in offensive RPM for point guards. So yeah, right. I mean, he's incredible to watch because of his ability. I think he's the best ball handler in the league. I know people will throw Steph Curry into that conversation. I don't think it's particularly close. I think Kyrie Irving goes and takes that much further than Steph Curry, and part of that might be just because Steph Curry doesn't feel the need to use it. But I really do think that Kyrie could maybe be the best ball handler of all time. And so just by the nature of that, he's incredibly electric.
Yeah, this makes for boring radio, but I agree with everything you just said. The narrative about who's the best ball handler in the league is always Kyrie Irving or Steph Curry. It's a common topic on NBA pregame shows. I've been playing NBA 2K17, and it's even mentioned on there. But yeah, I think that Steph does a thing with the ball that is highly unusual and maybe best ever. His release time is incredibly fast, and I think people sort of conflate dribbling with his release time, and they're sort of combining that into one thing. And maybe if you combine those two things, maybe he's a better ball handler. But I don't combine those two things. I sort of separate dribbling from shooting. And yeah, Kyrie's dribbling is like, yeah, it's a thing of beauty.
Yeah, I think something that's interesting about Kyrie is I once heard him be compared to the next closest thing we've had to Allen Iverson since Allen Iverson. And I actually think that's a pretty good comparison, because I actually think that Kyrie's a large amount more efficient than him at his best. But they're both...
Well, that's not saying much. Yeah, Iverson was... as right. fun as he was to watch, he was horribly inefficient. But that's part of the analogy here. I mean, Irving, I think one of the reasons why Irving has so many fans and the reason why he's such a popular player in the NBA is just the aesthetics of his game are so spectacular. And it was the same with Iverson.
Absolutely.
So
where should we start?
Yeah, we have some numbers here. I want to clarify something I said wrong. I think I said that Irving has not been in the top 20 in point guard RPM.
That's not
but
true.
In the last 3 years, that's not right. He was 9, not last season, but the season before.
Correct.
The other two seasons, he was not top 20. But yeah, his peak real plus minus is 9th best point guard, which is not that
still,
good. I mean,
yeah,
certainly his reputation.
Outpaces the narrative around him.
Right. Yeah. You know, so for example, Sports Illustrated just ranked Kyrie as the 25th best player in the NBA. And, you know, if he was the 9th best point guard and, you know, there's 5 positions, you know, you would expect him to be around 45th best. And, yes, yeah, certainly in terms
of. He was 38th best that same year.
Yeah. Overall, right?
Right.
Yeah. And last year he was like 170th or something. And that includes his postseason performance, which of course was spectacular. His turnaround from his regular season performance to his postseason performance is still something that I'm having problems wrapping my mind around. Like, do you think, like, how? Yeah, I just don't know how to evaluate this. Like, do you think that, like, that player that we saw in the playoffs is something we can, like, is that level something that we can reasonably expect going forward?
So I think there's a few different ways to attack that question. One, is Kyrie Irving going to continue to improve by the virtue of his age? He's 24 years old. He's going to turn 25 next season. So he's still pretty young, but on the other hand, he'll be entering into his sixth NBA season. So does he have room to actually improve, or do we know what he actually is? That's one side of the equation. And the other side of the equation is he was coming off an injury last season. In a way, multiple injuries actually, with the kneecap, and then also the the injury, the overuse. What was that
Yeah,
again?
he had two different knee injuries. The first, the one that he struggled with all of 2 seasons ago, was this knee tendonitis, and he ended up missing a few games in the earlier rounds of the playoffs. And that is a repetitive stress injury, and really just takes rest to go away. And then in game one of the finals, he actually fractured his knee, the same knee, so it was sort of confusing to keep those two injuries separate. But we didn't see any, we haven't heard anything about the knee tendonitis, which is good because, obviously he played a lot of minutes in the playoffs last season, and then he went straight to Rio to play in the Olympics. And I haven't heard anything about his knee, and I looked it up today, actually. I just haven't seen anything about it. So that's good.
Yeah, that's good. I would also assume that they wouldn't report anything if they don't have to. But I mean, we can assume that he has one of the best medical professionals working with him on the planet. So you would assume, yeah, hopefully that's in the past. Just like to start breaking into the question of what Kyrie is the Kyrie that we could project into the future. The difference between his playoff statistics versus his regular season statistics of last year are pretty stark. And I think the biggest one is the difference between his 3-point shooting. In the regular season last year, he shot 32% from three. And in the playoffs, he shot 44%, which is about a 12% improvement. And now, obviously, there's a small sample size with the playoffs. But it's not the he also in the playoffs the year before, he only played what 11 games or so, but he also saw an improvement where he was shooting about, I think it was 45%. So in that very small sample, it seems that he does have this gear that he can kick in. And I think if you're asking the question of why was he so bad in RPM last year, well, part of that's got to be, I think it seems to point, if you look across his career 3-point percentages, his first season in the league, he shot 39.9% from three. The second season, 39.1%. The third season, 35.8%. And so you can see that it decreased as teams seem to key in on him being the only offensive threat on the team. Then LeBron joins the team and he shoots 41.5%. I think that the real Kyrie Irving is the Kyrie Irving that shoots 60% at the rim, 41.5% from three, because he has all that space, and not the one that shoots 32%. And so he was a top 10 point guard in RPM that hit during his best season. And I think as long as Kevin Love and LeBron James are on the court with him, he's going to continue to have that space to do things around the rim and hit open threes. So I'm not. I think maybe that's a different conversation of like where does he project into the future. But I think I can say pretty soundly and pretty confidently that the RPM number from last year is pretty deceptive because he was coming off of a summer where he wasn't able to play at all.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely do not think that Kyrie Irving is like the 150th best player in the NBA, which is where his RPM from last year was. Like, he was not good. I do also, yeah, I also agree that his sort of real, quote unquote, real 3-point percentage is something much closer to 40 than it is to 30. And I think, oh boy. Do you think he'll shoot over 40% from three this year?
I do. I definitely do. I think that his natural 3-point percentage is basically 40%, if not like 41. I mean, like he shoots it. I mean, if
He's
he
a
took
great
out,
shooter. I mean, flat out, he's a great shooter,
he's an incredible shooter. If he
which is
only
part of
took,
why. Yeah, go ahead.
sorry, if he only took like shots that were wide open, Then I guess I should have looked that up. I should have looked up his wide open 3-point percentage because he takes a lot of contested threes and still shot
He does.
41%
Yeah,
from the field.
exactly. Yeah, like yeah, when you see somebody like Kyle Korver, his 3-point percentage is great, but he's not doing a lot of things off the dribble. So if you sacrifice a little bit of efficiency, but you're able to get that shot up a lot more, the sort of canonical example here is Steph Curry, that's the best possible situation. You want volume combined with high efficiency. And Korver is low volume, high efficiency. Irving, I think, can be one of those guys that's high volume, high efficiency. And yeah, it's just that 32% in the regular season last year was just so discouraging and disappointing and confusing. But yeah, the 44% in the playoffs really makes one wonder. And it's not like playoff teams are confused about whether or not they need to get out and guard Kyrie Irving. If anything, playoff teams' defenses are on average better than what he's going to see throughout most of the regular season. So I think there's some hope for some upside even beyond 40%, 42, 43. And if he starts getting up into that area of 3-point field goal percentage, he's going to start getting up into the sort of first or second tier of elite point guards in the NBA. And I know a lot of people already have him there, but by RPM, he's just not there. But if he can shoot in that area, I think he will be.
So according to NBA.com, he shot. I'm basically just gonna look at 14-15 instead of 15-16 to look at these type of stats because
Yeah.
I don't.
You're just going to call you're going to call last season an anomaly.
Yep. Yeah.
Okay.
He shot 36.5% of wide open threes. He shot 36.5% of
Wow, and
wide
his
open
overall
threes.
was 41.5, so that means that
It was his
he
worst
shoots
of any
better when he
category.
better when contested. Now look, there's always sample size issues here.
Right.
But yeah, that's interesting.
It was kind of interesting. I mean, his best percentage is when he was very tight, defender 0 to 2 feet. So I don't know, something about competition level, maybe, or it's just a small sample size, more
Yeah,
likely.
well, it's probably a combination of both. He probably has a quick release and the right arc that he's able to get it over defenders' hands. But Curry has that. He has a super quick release, and his arc is, I guess, perfect through by a few different ways of quantifying that. And so that's probably what's going on there. Some people have like super low trajectory shots, and it, nearby defenders can make that a little bit of a bigger problem. So did you want to talk about his rim field goal percentage? I know you collected some numbers here.
Yeah, so I looked up some of his rim attempt and rim shots per game numbers.
So first
Sorry.
off, what is so where did you get these numbers?
This is Basketball Reference. If you go
Okay.
to the shots dashboard or shooting, I guess, page
Yeah.
for, and I pulled last year's number. Well, I pulled his entire career numbers, and I this th those numbers include both regular season and playoffs. So I just kind
Okay.
of wanted to make the sample size as wide as possible because there is a difference between playoffs and regular season, but hypothetically, it's kind of the same thing. You're playing the same game. And the reason why I wanted to look at that is because I remember reading in the past that Kyrie is not actually particularly great at shooting around the rim, which is surprising because he does so many acrobatic
Right, he's on Sports Center every
finishes.
night.
Right, absolutely. So I just wanted I was thinking, we've heard all the complaints about the defense and the passing, which we haven't talked about yet, but are there places where Kyrie can improve rather than just he should pass more, right? Like that's not like particularly helpful. And if
Yeah.
you ask me right now, is Kyrie gonna see a significant improvement in his assist numbers? I would say probably not.
Yeah. Yeah, at
But
some point you are what you are, right? Like you don't suddenly get better court vision and desire to have higher awareness.
Right. And so, maybe he could see some improvement in that next year and
I can
that.
see a marginal improvement. I just don't think he's suddenly going to become Chris Paul.
Right. No, certainly not. And actually, one of his first games back last season, he actually had like an 8-assist game or something like that, maybe 10.
Yes, I know.
And I remember thinking, "Oh my word, like Kyrie Irving has sent, like, he's trained with LeBron James for a season. LeBron is like has whispered in his ear the secrets needed to be a great passer. And then of course that didn't really happen.
Yes.
But I mean, like, we're kind of getting on a tangent about passing. He has the physical ability. I actually think the reason why he doesn't always get the passes are twofold. Let's just talk about this for a second. We'll get to the rim numbers later.
Sure.
One, he dribbles the ball so hard. So hard. There's just – he's focusing on that so much. You can't look around and see where the open man is.
I can't dribble like that, but when I'm paying attention to my – I can't even like say this with a straight face – to my dribble moves, my head is not up looking around. It's hard to have court vision and be a strong dribbler. And take people off the dribble. And that's one of the things that Chris Paul is so good at. Like, his head is always up.
And I mean, if you go look up Kyrie Irving playing, he doesn't have his head down necessarily.
I know.
I just mean that he's so focused on
it's on a spectrum, though. It's a spectrum.
Right. He's trying to get that defender out of the way. That's his entire focus of his mind. Like, he is not focused on getting that outlet pass. And I think that's something that he could work on, but I just think that that's one of the reasons why that happens. And so when people say, well, he should pass more, I'm not sure they fully understand what they're asking him to do, because I do think it would require him doing less of the exciting things and trying to do the things that are, you know, more of the dirty work. I do think that for that same reason, what you just said, Chris Paul has been kind of underrated his entire career. I don't think we realize that he's one of the best point guards of all time.
Yeah,
because he doesn't have that flashiness. And then the second reason why I think Kyrie is not good at passing is, oh, this happens every time I start talking, doesn't it?
Getting old, man. Getting old.
There's some memory issues. I've had some concussions, and
I don't know why. So I'll fill the awkward gap here with some noise. I think that he. Yeah, I just don't know. I think that part of it is related to the injuries he's had. So, you know, in high school, he was, I'm sure, the best player probably in his state. He was highly recruited and ended up at Duke. He played, 19 games or 11 games at Duke? And, you know, even while he was there, I don't think there was enough time to sort of grow as a passer. And then in his first few years in Cleveland, who's he going to pass to, right? Jameson? Like, it's just not...
Right, that was actually my second point passing, was that I think not even specifically who's he going to pass to, like, with a wide-open three. I actually think that one of his biggest problems is he almost never passes to the roll man on a pick-and-roll.
Yeah.
Almost never. Like, more than any player... I don't have any numbers to back this up, but just based on the eye test, he passes so infrequently to the roll man. And I think one of the reasons that happened is because he had no roll man to pass to that he could trust in his first few years in the NBA, because you don't really run a pick and roll in this in college or high school. That's not really how basketball is played at those levels. But the NBA is a pick and roll league, and he didn't have a guy that he could trust, and so he never had to develop those skills. And I hate to say, like, maybe it's too late. And I saw some really good potential with the LeBron Kyrie pick and roll. I think that could be unstoppable if they keep using that. They started using it for the first time in the playoffs last year. But I do think that that's actually I'm less concerned with him finding the man on the weak side and so he can swing it around than I am with I wish that he would be able to find. I mean, Matthew Dellavedova and Tristan Thompson have great chemistry. Like, where's Kyrie? Where's Kyrie with that chemistry?
Yeah, it was striking watching how, you know, quote unquote bad Kyrie was at it. Because then Deli would come in and get two alley oops a game that were just easy finishes. And you'd love. I mean, obviously Irving has the physical abilities, the tools to do that. He's more athletic than Matthew Dellavedova, so he can do it. He just needs some practice. The thing with Kyrie's age is great. I mean, he's so young, and he's actually in some ways younger than he's actually young. Let me explain that. So because he's been injured so much, he's missed so much time, and so a lot of time when he would be growing as a player, he hasn't really had that opportunity yet. And it's a bummer because you want to get that, you know, you want to play as much during your peak growth years as possible. But, you know, Irving is what he is, even though he's been injured. I think there's some reason for, like, if you know, a normal 24-year-old has, you know, a growth curve that looks, you know, like something, you might expect Irving's growth curve to look steeper because of how much time he's missed. Now, if he gets hurt again, then that all goes out the window, and Irving has not really proven himself a durable player, except for last year during the playoffs, which is good. So, yeah, we'll just have to see. It's just hard to know what injuries may lie in wait for him, but I think there's some room for him to improve even beyond his young age. So,
yeah, I think going back to the pick and roll, I think something that Matthew Dellavedova did that Kyrie doesn't do very often is wait for the roll man to catch up. And so Matthew Dellavedova would run through the screen, and then he would take a hitch step, a little half step,
yes,
and wait for Tristan Thompson to roll to the basket. And
yeah,
then
he got called. He would get called for a travel on that sometimes because the way that he takes that hitch step, he sort of carries the ball a little bit. Anyway, go ahead.
Right, and Kyrie kind of just goes full steam ahead.
Yes.
And because he's just looking for his shot. Now, what I don't want all the listeners on our podcast to hear me saying is I don't want him to look for a shot at the rim. He is an amazing offensive player, and he needs to take advantage of those opportunities. But
yeah,
when
vision.
He's triple covered on the rim, the best decision is not to try to go up for a reverse layup. The
right.
best decision is to either try to hit the roll man or swing it around to the weak side. And yeah, so I mean, I think this is a good time as any to move into these rim numbers.
Sure, lay it on us.
And the reason why I looked it up is because I think that this is a place where he could actually stand to improve. And he definitely, as we've said, has tons of physical gifts. And I his three-point numbers are going to regress back to what they looked like 2 years ago. I really believe that.
Or progress, I guess.
Progress, right. Well, I mean, yeah.
I guess it's
anyways.
Actually, maybe that's called regression, even you regress if you are below the mean and you are going toward it. Is that still called regression?
In economics, we tended to use it just regression to either way.
Yeah. Okay.
I've always used regression.
That might be right. That's
probably
right.
I think that might be an either or type of deal.
Okay.
Tomato, tomato.
But, we can move on.
regressions.
And now for the pedantic segment.
Yeah. Exactly. Anyways, he in his first season in the NBA shot 61.4% at the rim, and in 2 years ago, which is basically his best overall statistical season, he shot 60.2% from the rim, and last year he shot 58. And
do you know the rim percentage for, like, for example, LeBron James?
I do know the field goal percentage for LeBron James around the rim. It is 72.2%.
Wow.
Which is right up there with DeAndre Jordan.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense. LeBron is famously good at the rim. Okay, so all right, so LeBron 72. Do you know any other guards?
Yeah, so according to Basketball Reference, the league average, so guards and centers and forwards, is 62%.
So everybody.
So that's for everybody. And so for some other players to compare him to, the best in the league for guards last year was Stephen Curry. No surprises
right.
there.
Yeah.
67.4 with that teardrop floater that he always likes to use.
And everybody's so busy getting up on him that he's probably
right.
able to get past his primary defender pretty often.
Now, he's very talented around the rim, but you do have to definitely put an asterisk there that percentage is so inflated because of the system that he plays in. Now, he needs to hit the shots, but I've watched enough Warriors games to see how many wide open layups
right.
he gets.
Yeah, that scoop layup. So.
I've actually tried to play to practice that shot because I think it's really cool.
How's
I don't know if I'm allowed
you?
To say that on this podcast.
So working?
some other players, James Harden shoots 64.7% at the rim. Kyle Lowry shot 61.4 last year.
CP3. All these guys are above. Irving was 59 for his career and 58 last year, you said?
That's correct. And okay. Then the year before that, which I'm kind of using as our high watermark year, was 60.2. So okay. I think that this is a place that Kyrie Irving can improve in. And I think because, I mean, obviously the spacing's still going to be there. Hopefully J.R. Smith is going to sign back. You now have Channing Frye in the second unit. So they're spacing the whole time. And he should be able to get to the rim at will. And I think that with a whole season of practice, with playing in the Olympics, that he should be able to come in and improve that number. Because even boosting it up to 61% puts him in pretty elite company. And I would love to see him improve that level of efficiency.
Yeah, I mean,
I think that's key for him taking it to the next level is that rim. Because I don't want him taking mid-range jumpers, obviously.
Right. Yeah, it's interesting because he is so optically talented around the rim. So, you know, Curry is at 67%, Harden's at 65%. I would hope that Irving could get to that level just because I think he has the same sort of a similar amount of talent there. So then it just becomes decision making. And that's something that improves with experience. And that's, you know, something that Irving is getting in spades lately. So, yeah, the hypothesis that it could improve a few percentage, I think, is a good one.
I think the other thing with Kyrie Irving is that you think about, like, a guy like James. You think about, like, what Harden is to the Rockets and what Steph Curry is to the Warriors, that those guys are obviously, you know, statistical gods. Like they play the most efficient game, and I often we think about. So let's say I'm trying to think of a good example of a guy who isn't favored statistically, DeRozan.
Sure.
We think about him and he's not like loved by the statistics, but I think that the statistical community really undervalues a trait that it's very hard to measure, which is the ability to create a shot. And Kyrie Irving can create his own shot. And that is a trait that not everyone can do. JJ Redick is an incredibly efficient player. If you listen to the Locked On Basketball podcast, or Locked On NBA rather, he has this points above replacement or something stat that he's never explained how he actually makes. And he says, oh, J.J. Redick is like one of the top five players in the league. But J.J. Redick can't create his own shot, and Kyrie Irving can. And so so with the conversation around, okay, Kyrie could be more efficient, he could play better defense, one thing is that you need a guy who can dribble the ball, and no one can dribble the ball better than Kyrie. And because he can dribble penetrate, that causes the panic in the defense. They get help on him, and they rotate. And so that's the moment where Kyrie needs to make that decision is, okay, can I hit this shot or should I find the open man? Because the defense is scrambling because he's penetrating. And that's such an important moment. And I do think – I totally agree with you. If anything's going to improve, I think it's that decision-making. And if that decision-making improves, you're going to see his assist numbers go up and you're going to see his rim percentage field goal go up.
Yeah. So – let me just respond to a couple things here. So the first thing is, I agree that the raw materials that Kyrie Irving has, maybe I'm putting words in your mouth here and stop me if I am, but I think you're saying that the raw materials that Kyrie Irving has in terms of athleticism and the skills he demonstrates on the court are, I guess, better to work with than, for example, J.J. Redick's, right? So there is something that Irving can do that Redick will never be able to do. And that's a good starting point. Is that an accurate categorization of what you were saying?
Yeah, I mean, I guess like another way to put it is that fundamentally what NBA defenses are trying to do is create dribble penetration to cause help and make the defense rotate so there's an open man for an open shot. That's like what modern NBA defenses are trying to do. And Kyrie Irving can handle the ball better than anyone to do that.
That's true. That does all make sense. The issue with Irving thus far in his career has been that in spite of having all of this talent and skill that is so pleasing to the eye, his efficiency by RPM and, you know, the plus the various different plus minus, you know, player encompassing stats are just not great. He's been just sort of so-so by RPM, which is the one that, you know, has the highest correlation to predictive winning numbers. So I think this is the year that he is going to turn the corner in the efficiency stats. I really think that everything's sort of coming together here. Like, he's getting to be at sort of peak age for player performance.
Right.
He's been healthy for long enough. We all saw what he did. You know, the last two things we've seen him do, the Olympics and the playoffs, he's looked terrific. And so I just think that this is going to be the year. But yeah, he hasn't been that great yet. And he's treated as if he's a superstar, and he just hasn't played at a superstar level, setting aside the playoffs of last year, which I fully concede, and I'm thrilled that happened. But in terms of, you know, what his body of work as a player has been, it's just been sort of so far. So yeah, I'm really interested to see what happens. I wanted to sort of wrap up with, like, I want us to, like, make a list of who we think the top point guards are for this season and then for the next five seasons, and then we'll get to the final thing, which is we'll predict his RPM. But did you want to cover anything else before we sort of segue into that?
Yeah, there's one more thing I want to say about Kyrie Irving, and one of his strengths is that he doesn't turn the ball over very often for a guy who dribbles as much as he does. And so I'm not sure you're going to see this massive uptick in assists, but he does a really good job of not being a minus in terms of creating extra possessions for the other team. And yeah, I think he's really good
at
that.
Especially considering, like, the number of dribbles he's performing, you would expect to see a higher turnover rate. His ball control, as we've both said, is terrific.
So much fun.
Okay, so let's do this. So I have a list of, I guess, my list has 10 names on it, but one of them we might contest, because one of them is James Harden, who is supposedly now a point guard. I have my top 10 point guards for this season, and maybe I'll go through my list, and then if you disagree with anything, maybe we can just pause and then just discuss the disagreement. So number one on my list for point guards is Stephen Curry from the Golden State Warriors.
How dare you?
Do you
he's last
do you disagree? He's actually not
league.
Even in the top 10.
Just kidding.
Okay,
he's
all right.
One,
so
obviously.
All right, Curry is one. Westbrook is two. Westbrook has a chance this year, I think, to work himself into the number one spot, just because I think he might put up some sort of video game stats this year without KD there too.
It's funny that you should say that, because I want to briefly respond to that comment.
Yep.
I think there's more in common with Kyrie Irving and Russell Westbrook than maybe a lot of people let along.
Okay.
Because Russell Westbrook also is not particularly good at finishing around the rim, despite the amount of in-game poster dunks that he has.
Yeah.
And he's a worse three-point shooter. Now,
Westbrook can't shoot.
What he's really good at is running in transition. And I think that if you gave Kyrie Irving, this is something else I didn't bring up, if they ran a lot more, I think Kyrie Irving's numbers would go up a lot more.
Yeah, I think so.
Because they don't often push. But all that to say, I mean, Westbrook's incredible, and he's probably the most fun player in the league to watch right now.
He's so intense. It's insane. Yeah, Westbrook is my favorite league pass guy to watch, just because, well, I think my favorite would be Curry, but I hate the Warriors, so I just can't. And then we're setting aside Cavs, obviously. I prefer watching LeBron and Irving. But for non-Cavs, yeah, I think Westbrook's my favorite player to watch. Okay, so we got Westbrook at two. I have Chris Paul at three. Any dispute there?
Small guards tend to fall off a cliff eventually. So
They do.
Maybe he won't.
And if I were a Clipper fan, I would have some concern.
Yeah, so he might fall off a cliff this year, but if we're basing this off last year, yeah, I think number three is pretty solid.
Yeah, so by RPM, Chris Paul was the third best player in the NBA last year. So number one was James, number two was Draymond Green, number three was Chris Paul, number four was Steph Curry, number five was Kawhi Leonard, number six was Russell Westbrook, And the reason why I did the top six is because I want to say who the seventh best was. The seventh best was Kyle Lowry. Cavs fans in particular probably have sort of a negative impression of Kyle Lowry just because he didn't play super great in the Eastern Conference Finals, but he is who I have in my number four spot for point guard.
I'm sorry. You said Kyle Lowry was fourth in RPM in point guards last year.
Was he fourth in point guards, or was he
looking
at? Yeah, he was fourth. Yeah, Paul, Curry, Westbrook, Lowry. Yep, you're right.
Yeah, sorry. I just needed to get that out there. Kyle Lowry.
But seventh
again,
overall. Seventh overall.
Sorry. Kyle Lowry, skinny Kyle Lowry, good player. I'm not sure he can replicate last year's season quite to that level.
Yeah.
But solid on defense, and the team's basically the same. So he's a little bit up there in years, but with the lost weight, I think he should continue to be pretty good.
Yep, and he's not old enough yet where I would expect too much of a cliff.
Right.
Okay. Let me read off this whole list just so that everyone knows what's coming. So I have Curry, Westbrook, Paul, Lowry, Harden, and we'll talk about whether Harden belongs on this list, Ricky Rubio, John Wall, Mike Conley, Kyrie Irving, Damian Lillard. That's my list, and so I just wanted to read it. All right, we'll keep going through it now. Okay, so Harden, I think it's sort of hard to argue that if you count him as a point guard that he doesn't deserve to be sort of in the top five here, but I don't know. Is he a point guard? He sort of was last year. I don't know. What is a point guard? What does it mean to be a point guard?
Right. Anyway. So I think a better distinction is probably lead guard, who's handling the ball the most, and that's definitely going to be James Harden.
Yep.
Patrick Beverley is still going to start, I'm pretty sure, and he's going to guard the twos. But yeah, James Harden, I think he's going to have better counting stats than Chris Paul next year, just in terms of if you don't adjust for possessions. Just if you've watched any of the preseason so far with the Rockets, their offense is already electric, and it's going to be fantastic to watch. So
yeah,
I think it's fair to put him in that list.
I am a rare James Harden fan. I like him for two reasons. One, Warriors fans hate him, and so just naturally I'm drawn to him. And then two, I find his game, the way that he's molded his game, I find really interesting. Like, he has noticed that drawing fouls is sort of a weakness, a soft spot in the NBA rules right now, and he has become perhaps the best at all time at drawing fouls. He has really strong wrists. He holds his arms out so that they just beg to get hacked. And he's elite at that. And yeah, shooting free throws is kind of boring, but that's not his fault. Like, he's trying to be the most efficient player he can possibly be. And he's, become really good at it.
Yeah, his free throw rate for his career is 54%, which is...
Yeah, I saw that on your free throw rate list. Yeah, that's ridiculous. Okay, so that's Harden. And then, here's probably the first controversial one is Ricky Rubio at five. Or six, if we're including Harden as a point guard. So just a little bit on Rubio. Rubio can't shoot. Everyone knows that. He was the second best point guard by defensive RPM last year. Chris Paul was one. And by overall RPM, he was the fifth best point guard. So Paul, Curry, Westbrook, Lowry, Rubio. I expect Rubio to get a little bit better this year. I think the Timberwolves are going to get a little bit better. I think that Rubio is... going to get a little bit better at shooting to the extent that's possible, and I expect his defense to remain elite. And so, yeah, I think he's going to be the fifth or sixth best point guard in the league. Do you feel otherwise?
Yeah, obviously it's not a very interesting podcast when you get two guys who like stats.
Yeah, I know. We're just basically going down to the RPM list, but yeah.
Right. Of course I agree that Ricky Rubio, at everything that is not shooting, is elite at.
Yeah,
he is fantastic at getting steals. He is actually pretty good at drawing fouls, and he shoots 88% on those.
Yep.
On those. And so basically anything that is not shooting, he is great at. The one thing is I'm not sure, and I know RPM is supposed to correct for all this. It's interesting that you said, well, he's going to be on a better team. So you kind of betrayed
right.
the...
That won't matter. It should only matter if he improves. But
right.
Good point.
I bet he's going to... I have a feeling he'll get traded this season. So maybe he'll... And if he doesn't get traded, I have a feeling they're going to reduce his minutes. And I know none of that should impact his RPM. but if it did, it would be on the margins.
Yeah. Okay, so let's get to the tough ones. I have John Wall and Mike Conley above
I
Kyrie
just threw
Irving.
up in my mouth that you said John Wall
I'm
before Kyrie.
sorry. I'm sorry. Yeah, I keep
There's
clicking my
we're
mouse on him
rioting.
here
Our
because
listeners are
it's.
rioting. With
So,
pitchforks
just to
they
put
come.
things in perspective, John Wall was seventh best in RPM last year. Kyrie Irving was in point guard RPM. John Wall was seventh best. Kyrie Irving was
And that was a
28th
down year for
best.
John Wall.
It was a down year for John Wall. John Wall is he? Yeah, he's 2 years older than Kyrie, so he might be sort of getting past his like improvement phase. But yeah, I like both Wall and Conley better. Conley, by the way, was number six in point guard RPM,
Can I
and
make my case against John Wall in all
please,
seriousness?
please, I don't want to think that Kyrie Irving is the ninth best point guard. I want to be convinced that he's better, but yeah, just
Was going to
that's
say
not
Tony
there.
Douglas should fill this spot,
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
but
because we just don't know
no,
his RPM.
I think that if I mean if you look back a year before, John Wall is actually the fourth in point guard RPM
Yep.
2 years ago. So, but I think. My concern with him is he's now had a major injury on each knee, and his biggest trait is his speed. And so, if he loses that, I don't know what I mean. He still is a good passer, but he doesn't have that elite blocking ability that he has. He's the best shot blocking point guard of all time right now. And if he loses that, and he loses his speed to run a transition and all the things that you can do with that. I'm not sure that's going to impact that number. So I could see him falling out of the top 10 next year. I'm not very high on Washington, and I'm not very high on John Wall. And this is my obligatory Kyrie is better than John Wall plug because I have to because I'm part of Cavs Twitter.
Yeah, I mean, John Wall shot 3% better from three than Kyrie Irving last year.
Well,
He's
okay.
a better passer. He's a better rebounder. Look, I'm saying things that I actually know are disingenuous. Like, obviously, Irving's a better 3-point shooter. Yeah, I just don't know. I don't understand John Wall's game enough to understand why his RPM is so high. It seems to me that the weaknesses in his game, like, should manifest themselves in such a way that he's not the seventh best. That better? Okay. Sorry about the headset issue there. Yeah, I mean, I would expect him to be lower on this list, but he's not, and so there he is. We don't need to talk much about Mike Conley. I think that Conley's starting to get a little bit old. I expect him to come down a little bit, but I still think that he will have a higher RPM than Irving.
Yeah, let me just throw in some ideas here.
Yeah.
If you take the year before that and not just look at last year's top RPM list, I think another person to throw in there, and this might sound crazy, but George Hill has
Yeah.
actually always been pretty favored by statistics, and
Yes.
that's a huge gain for a team desperately wanting an adult point guard in Utah. So
Yeah,
I
no,
think.
I just one other thing on George Hill. So he's no longer a pacer, and the Pacers replaced him with Jeff Teague. I'm not sure that's an upgrade. I mean, it's definitely being sold as an upgrade, but
I don't think it's an upgrade. I'm not sure if it's. I mean, I know that they're selling it as an upgrade. I'm not sure like anyone is was really fooled. I'm not sure why. I think Jeff Teague is an awful fit next to Monta Ellis. And I mean, I know this is a Cavs podcast, but I think that trade was basically. I think everything Indiana has done for the past 2 or 3 years has made little sense. But
I agree. And I'm
yeah.
glad they have.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just makes
Absolutely.
it.
And also, hey, here's my controversial, my hot take. Paul George isn't that good.
Whoa. Okay. Well, we'll get to that in our LeBron James episode because I'm sure PG-13 will
Oh,
come up.
I cannot wait to talk
Well,
about how Paul George
that's
isn't that
interesting.
good.
Oh, wow. Okay. No, I'm interested in hearing that. I haven't heard this opinion out of
He
you
shot
before.
like sub 40%, like December on.
Yeah, I know. I know. Yeah, we'll get to that later. Okay, so all right, so I have Irving at 9 or 10, depending on whether or not you count Harden as a point guard. Let's count Harden as a point guard just so that we have that puts Irving at 9. And then the first guy who I think is worse than Irving is Damian Lillard. That's the next guy on my list. But yeah, I think Irving will be better than Dame this year. Other games are pretty similar, so I think that's sort of an interesting comparison.
Yeah, Lillard gets to the rim a little bit more. and he takes even deeper threes than Kyrie. But yeah, they do have very similar counting stats.
Lillard by so there were a bunch of sort of charts and stuff that were showing how crazy deep Steph Curry was taking threes last year, and Lillard was always number two on those lists. Lillard likes taking some sort of wild threes as well. So okay, that's my list. I want to just clarify. So that's my list for
Can
next
I say
season.
mine real quick?
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, please.
Okay, Curry, Westbrook, Harden. Okay, Curry, Westbrook, Harden, Chris Paul, Kyle Lowry, Kyrie Irving, Rubio, Lillard, Conley.
Rubio,
Wall.
Lillard, Conley. You're like, Wall is not on the list.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, I gotcha. Interesting. Yeah, we'll see. I mean, yeah, we'll see. We'll just have to see. I hope you're right. And I do think Irving has that kind of upside. I just don't think he's going to get it all in 1 year. Okay, so yeah, just one other thing I wanted to mention before we get to the RPM predictions. For the next 5 seasons, if I could have any of those guys, I would take Curry, Westbrook, Harden, then Irving. Would you take Irving over Harden? I think Irving has
I'm
more
trying to be
upside than
political
Harden.
here.
I think Irving has more upside than Harden, but Harden's current level, I think, is significantly better than Irving's, and I'm not sure Irving will get to that level. So
Yeah, I mean,
that's the issue there.
I think Harden should have won MVP 2 years ago over Steph Curry. Like, we're talking about a guy who was a legit MVP candidate. But
He was.
I have my
I don't
doubts
think he should
about
have won,
his.
but I agree he was a legit candidate.
Right. I mean, at very least, he was the re very real number two, and I don't think
Yes.
there was anyone else in the discussion. And Kyrie Irving's never even gotten anything close to that, but he is still young. He has some upside, and I don't like Harden as a locker room influence. So I'm going to say the guy who made me fall in love with basketball, Kyrie Irving.
Interesting. Okay, so would you take Curry and Westbrook over Irving for the next 5 years?
Westbrook relies so much on his athleticism. I would
Don't
definitely
say
take.
that. Go ahead. Go
I
ahead.
would definitely take Curry.
Okay. Well, gee, that's really magnanimous of you.
Russell Westbrook is what, 28 years old?
Yeah.
So 27. So he'll be 28 this season.
When does he turn 28?
November. So we're talking. Yeah, I'd take Russell Westbrook. Yeah, I'm gonna take Russell Westbrook
Okay. I
over
mean,
Curry.
look, it's not like Irving is Cal Ripken here, right? Like, Irving could get hurt. So there,
That's also true.
I
And
think he
also, it'd be
has more
really
down. I think
interesting to
he has
see
more
Cal Ripken
downside.
play basketball.
It would be. I bet he's not very good. I think Curry and Westbrook have less downside injury risk than Irving.
It's true.
Curry, a few years ago, I would have said differently, but Westbrook, aside from that one injury, has been generally healthy. And Curry, despite struggling with injuries early in his career, has been very healthy lately. So,
Yeah.
anyway. Okay. Here we get to my favorite part, which is
Dun,
what do you
dun,
think Kyrie Irving's real plus minus this year will be? So, let me just put some context on this. So, amongst point guards last year, well, I'll do all players. So, the number one player by real plus minus last year was LeBron James. He had a 9.79 real plus minus. The number three player was Chris Paul with an 8.59. Steph Curry was four with an 8.51. They were extremely close. I'm just going to go down point guards now. Westbrook was 7.85. Lowry was 6.82. Rubio, 4.14. So already we're at half the RPM by the number five point guard. Conley was 2.86. So now we're at a third. John Wall, 2.72. Kemba Walker, 2.58. Patrick Beverley, 2.38. Goran Dragic, 2.12. And then number 11, Eric Bledsoe, was 1.7. Irving last year had a negative 0.6 RPM. And that includes the playoffs, but that also includes his 4 months of terrible regular season play. So the year before, which was Irving's best year by RPM, he had a 3.4 RPM.
Yeah, can I say something about RPM real quick?
Yes.
That actually made me more of a question for you.
Yeah.
In the first year of RPM, the 10th best point guard in the league had a 3.43
Yeah.
RPM.
Yeah.
In the second year, it was about 3.5 four again, and then in the third year it was in the twos.
Yeah.
And so it actually dropped the whole top 10 after the fourth guy dropped quite a bit.
Yeah, I noticed
it was
that
2.12.
as well.
So I'm just wondering, are they adjusting this like year to year as they get more data?
They are not. It should sum to the same amount across all NBA players.
Interesting. Interesting. So point guards just got worse, I guess.
Yes. That's what happened. If you were to look at just plus minus, I'm very confident. I wouldn't bet my life on this, but I would bet 20-1 that the plus minus generated by point guards dropped a commensurate amount last year. That sort of is reflected in this drop in RPM.
Interesting.
Okay.
Ready to predict?
Yes.
I'm going to go first.
I have a number in mind. I think it is your turn to go first, but like I've been making such a big deal about of trying to bait people into betting me on this. So I'll just say it. I think Kyrie Irving will have an RPM of 4 this year, which will be a significant career high for him. But that's what I think it'll be. I think it'll be 4, and I think that will make him like 6th or 7th best point guard.
Interesting. I was going to say somewhere around like 3.8.
What? You're going to say lower than me? Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. I've tended to be more negative. It's funny because I tend to argue the more positive, and then when we get to the numbers, I take the more negative.
Yeah.
But
well, let's do this. Let's call the Cavalytics official prediction 3.9. Because I feel like I could talk you into 3.9 if we talked for long enough, and you could talk me into 3.9 if we talked long enough.
Yeah.
And then any of our listeners who think that Kyrie Irving will do, let's call it 4. Let's make it so that there needs to be a 0.4 difference. So if anybody thinks he will do 4.3 or higher, and they are willing to buy us a pizza if he does 3.5 or lower, we will buy them a pizza if it's 4.3 or higher. Does that make sense? Did I explain that in a way that wasn't... That sounded a little convoluted.
Yeah, maybe we'll make a document.
Okay, so if anybody thinks Kyrie Irving will have an RPM over 4.3, they should let us know, and we will bet them a pizza. And if it's over 4.3, you get a pizza. If it's below 3.5, you owe us a pizza. If it's between 3.5 and 4.3, it's a push.
Right. Got it.
That's what's going on. It turns out after all that negative Irving talk, I guess let me editorialize a little bit about why I'm sort of negative on Irving. I find the common fan's impression of Irving a little bit frustrating.
Right.
I often get into these like, oh, well, you're just a stats nerd. You don't watch the court. Like, I know what I see, and I can see that Irving has that killer instinct. It's like, okay, well, that's nice, but statistically, he has not been very good. Certainly, he's been less good than his reputation. And I just get a little bit frustrated with that. And I find it tiresome having to argue about what Irving's real plus minus is and what that means in the scheme of things. Like, I just find that kind of tiresome. So some of my negativity about Irving is just in response to an irritation that I have about some of the more non-stats savvy fans, but that's really on me. That's I need to be more tolerant of that. And then the second thing is he has so much physical talent, and it bothers me that he's not better defensively. I just feel like it's like, come on, man, stop getting blown by. Like, stop getting like simple pick and rolls. Like, stop getting tricked by that. It's just irritating to watch. He was better in the playoffs, and I hope to see more improvement there this season. But those are sort of my sort of two reasons. I personally find him a joy to watch. I mean, who wouldn't, he's spectacular with dribbling. His shooting's incredible. His creativity around the rim is nice. He's handsome. He's got the whole package. You know, he can sing, he can dance. What's not to like? His Instagram is fun to follow. He plays video games. Like, he's just, you know,
he hits super clutch shots.
He
regularly
won the NBA Finals for the Cleveland Cavaliers.
He's made a career out of hitting crazy shots. Like,
he has, He has that right side three is his go-to, and boy,
Loves that. Yeah.
good thing. So anyway, yeah, I felt like I didn't explain enough.
I want to let me briefly explain why I always end up having the under on these RPM predictions.
Yes.
I do want to say, like, I think it's probably just the maybe it was the way I was raised. I don't know. I tend to take like be pretty conservative when I'm forecasting, and I would love more than I would rather be surprised on the over than be disappointed with the under.
Sure.
And I think that's why I always that's why I was pretty low on Kevin Love in the last episode, and I think that was just because I'm pretty confused why he's so high in RPM, and I'm not sure I fully believe it. And so
Yeah.
I was kind of just betting on it,
To what you think
regressing.
it should be.
Right. Yeah. So I was betting on my intuition, I guess, which
Yeah.
is probably a
We'll see
bad
how
bet,
that
but
goes.
we'll see how it goes.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think that's a pretty good spot to wrap up. This has been episode 42 of Cavalytics. You can email us at cavalyticsnba@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter @cavalyticsnba. And yeah, just a reminder, if you think that your predicting abilities are better than ours, there's pizza on the line here, so please contact us. And we respond to everything there, so feel free. Thanks for listening, and go Cavs.